other side of it, and there was an electric utility that had that. Its valuation was challenged by a county auditor and was sustained because the tax commissioner departed from the special circumstance. The other end of it was completely new property. It had a new utility, and the commissioner would depart from that. This valuation approach was challenged in a number of cases, over 100 per year during the mid-80s, challenges by county auditors on behalf of school districts seeking to up the tax base, challenges by utilities. The two that made their way to this court were Hatchell Rain versus Limited, that was decided in 1986, and then later, Snyder versus Limbaugh. Hatchadorian versus Limited was a challenge to the valuation of AT&T's property. Snyder versus Limbaugh was a challenge by a group of county auditors to the valuation of Cleveland Electric Illuminating's property. In both cases, this court upheld the tax commissioner's use of the 50% formula when it's adjusted for special and unusual circumstances, when commissioner was willing to consider other evidence. However, as a result of the amount of litigation during the 80s, the task force was formed. Industry representatives and government representatives that looked at the problem and made proposals to the General Assembly. Those proposals included a number of more definite ways of approaching the issue of valuation. One of the proposals thrown out was the idea of using unitary method appraisals, which are used by statute for railroads. Basically, they do an income approach, a cost approach, and a stock and debt approach to the valuation of the property. Another proposal advocated by the industry representatives was a cost approach, similar to the 302 that had been administratively applied by the tax commissioner in the case of general personal property.
Now that we have, and I know that it was you wanted to tell us that there was a legislative attempt to come to some kind of a statutory method that's acceptable to parties, and this is some kind of compromise. Now that we have statutory method, what is there any appropriate basis in the mind of the commissioner and in the position of the commissioner for deviating from that statutory method?
Yes.
And when is it appropriate in your view?
Special and unusual circumstances. That is the standard the commissioner has attempted to apply.
But it's not statutory, excuse me.
No. The statutory standard is a cost approach. Capitalized cost is shown on the books, less prescribed annual allowances for depreciation and deduction. That was the choice of the General Assembly. And then the General Assembly gave the tax commissioner discretion to depart from that approach if the tax commissioner determined that it did not result in true value.
What's the special circumstances here?
Well, there were two special circumstances cited by the court. The tax commissioner tried to find out. If you look at the final order of the tax commissioner was solicited input from the taxpayer and was stonewalled by the taxpayer. The taxpayer didn't provide any. At the board, there were two arguments made and accepted by the board as special circumstances supporting an abandonment. First, they said that, at least with respect to the one company, Texas Eastern, that it had a pipeline that was installed during World War II, the Ward Emergency Pipeline, that because of relaxed standards during the war, it was not properly coated. It had suffered extreme deterioration, and therefore it was leaking. It simply wasn't operating in capacity. That is a special and unusual circumstance. The problem was that circumstance was eliminated the year before the listing date. In this case, it no longer was a special circumstance.
Because of an alternate line.
Pardon?
An alternate line.
They restored, replaced sections, restored parts of it. And it was called the capacity restoration project.
But isn't the $80 million that they spent to restore it, does that qualify as a special circumstance? Does that have some bearing on it?
If you have a truck that's a lemon because it's got a bad engine, you put a new engine in and you capitalize that cost and you write off everything, you write off from the books everything that you eliminate, you basically get an got brand new property put in there or capitalized cost of improving this property, which is for itself, made it fully serviceable, said it made it fully serviceable.
Mr. Sowers, is it the position of the commissioner that only the commissioner can determine that it's appropriate to vary or from the statutory method? Or is that, does it permit that same option to the taxpayer to seek to go through value?
Statute charges commission, and it uses language like, it's a specific language, if the commissioner finds that this cost approach prescribed by the statute does not result in true value, the commissioner met. It starts out, commissioner shall use the cost approach. If the commissioner finds that the approach, this cost approach does not result in true value, the commissioner met. That's very comparable to your penalty remission, where it says that the penalty, in your other text, the penalty shall be imposed, the commissioner may remit the penalty. The commissioner, in attempting to determine whether or not to depart, has applied what historically this court had always used for purposes of departing from the tree of truth, the general personal property tax, special and unusual circumstances. So, it's not you, the commissioner, to do.
Is that reviewable by court? That
but it should be reviewable under standard of abuse of
discretion.
That's what we believe. And in this case, there was no abuse.
You have in your brief, and three times this morning, talked about special and unusual circumstances. Does the statute, however, say special or unusual circumstances?
Special or unusual.
But it makes a difference.
Well, where is it in statute? It's not in the statute,
it's
is it?
It's not in the statute.
No, it's in our case, isn't it?
No. It derives from cases. And what it derives from is the old cases that in which apply the general personal property tax. Under 5711.18, the general personal property tax commission was required to use depreciated book value unless...
I guess my question is, why all this emphasis on interest in special or unusual circumstances when it's not in the statute? It's in a case that was decided by us a number of years before the statute was changed, and it's a part of a 302 rule that the commissioner uses. It's nothing. There's nothing that says that anyone has to use special unusual circumstances. There is a way to test whether the taxpayer ought to have a different formula for determining taxes?
In the absence of something specified by the General Assembly, it's the best, and that's why we're admitting that it is something the tax commissioner has pulled out of the case. This goes back to Harper versus Kennedy, the same older cases that we cited, but this court articulated. In the absence of it, you have no standard. There's no standard in 5727.11 for departure. And there's certainly the fact that a unitary person comes up with a different value should not.
Doesn't the statute, I agree, the statute seems to say this is the way you're going to, this is the way, commissioner, you shall determine true value for these purposes, and then says if the commissioner finds the application method will not result in determining true value, you may use another value method evaluation, which really leaves it wide open. But why wouldn't you just argue that it's that the taxpayer has to show that your method, that the statutory method, does not produce true value, rather than using the special circumstance test?
Because there's a real problem with the concept of a true value as it's worked out in this case. One of the problems that you have is that the board, the master, the taxpayer, has assumed that true value has a constitutional meaning, that the standard of true value is value determined by a unitary appraisal. In fact, over the years,
but they don't argue that the statute, that point 11 is unconstitutional because the General Assembly attempted to say this shall be true value for this kind of property, do they?
I hope that they don't, and yet they try to skirt it.
Well, they don't. I don't read them as saying it's unconstitutional. They're saying here's the statute, but the General Assembly has given the tax commissioner and I guess the taxpayer wide berth in deciding what is really true value, even though the General Assembly has stated its preference.
We submit that there isn't wide berth, because the General Assembly, if you look through the various provisions the General Assembly has made for valuation of the property of different classes of taxpayers, it's been very specific with respect to the production of
utilities?
It said, you value it at 50% of cost. No ifs, ands, or buts. No escape clause based on tax commission or making a determination to value what it was. In the case of the gas supply of a pipeline company, it says that if it's current gas, that gas can actually be recovered from underground wells. It's valued at 100% of cost. In the case of what's called non-current gas, that gas is non-recoverable. It's in the walls, it provides pressure in the wells, but it's non-recoverable. You value it at 35%. These are all express provisions.
Counsel, you're wandering off, it seems to be other matters. Help me out here with what you perceive to be the issue. You have a statute that says this is the way you determine the value, but it has an escape clause at the end. And your argument is the only escape should be the escape in terms of valuation that the commissioner deems appropriate based on prior case law under a different statute. Is that basically where you are?
That is how the commissioner has applied it, yes, and that's what I said.
And
the very narrow escape clause.
But it's the escape clause that the commissioner deems appropriate. Now, the statute doesn't really say that, does it?
The statute does not give a standard.
Okay.
Except for the fact that
your time's running out. Could you tell us what's fundamentally flawed about their approach other than that the commissioner doesn't like it?
What's fundamentally flawed is that as it was enacted, this tax and this valuation is self-assessing. Basically, General Assembly set it up so that a taxpayer can go in and say, these are the annual allowances, this is my value. Taxing authorities can rely on that. As the board's decision stands, the tax commissioner cannot apply that unless the tax commissioner goes out first and gets a unitary appraisal to support it. And their own witnesses admitted, both of their unitary appraisers admitted that they never agreed. The fact is, it's not workable. It makes the statutory formula completely meaningless. That's the fundamental.
So did the BPA have the authority to accept the unit valuation?
No. Not without any special or unusual circumstances being shown. It can't simply substitute unitary valuation as the standard of true value when the General Assembly has expressly adopted a different approach.
Mr. Sauer, I get an uneasy feeling about this case, and I guess I just want to have a short answer to this question. I don't want another MCI case sneaking up on us. It's a very nuclear case, that I understand, or I've read the papers on its way here, involving $1 billion. Impact this at all?
If you get a perinuclear, it involves 50% that I was alluding to, 50% of capitalized.
But are we going to hear that same argument from the perinuclear people?
They're going to want to look at this. Yeah, they try. So
this does have...
If you're asking other problems on the horizon, if the statutory formula is not applied, if the board's style of an escape clause, it basically substitutes unitary appraisal methodology for cost methodology, is adopted, the statute becomes meaningless. Commissioners are going to have to retain appraisers, and you're going to have appraisers in each and every case, and we'll see what we saw in the 50s. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sauer. Mr. Swassler.
Your Honor. I'd like to begin, if I could, with the points that I don't think are in dispute in this case. Those points are as follows. First, as this Court has recognized on numerous occasions through the years, true value is the ultimate test in valuing personal property, including public utility personal property. Second, I don't think there's any dispute as to what true value is. Again, this Court has spoken to that issue on any number of occasions. Tax Commissioner has agreed with how we always define true value as the price which a willing buyer would pay a willing seller in an open market transaction. We all know that. Third, we all know that this Court has recognized that an appraisal, in this case it was a unit appraisal, in other cases it's been other kinds of appraisals, appropriate way of coming up with true value. And finally, this court has recognized on numerous occasions through the years, that true value is a factual determination for the BTA. And that determination will not be reversed if it is supported by probative evidence.
If that's the case, that we really are going to go all the way back to saying the basics of true value and the BTA determines true value, what purpose is served by legislative enactments such as this that set a presumption, if that's what it is, a rebuttable presumption or... I think the commissioner's making the argument that basically this throws it out the window, that it'll just be another, like every other sort of evaluation, true value with appraisers on each side, and the presumption sort of goes out the window. What about that?
Well, certainly there is a statutory method that's prescribed, and our position is simple. The statute prescribes a prima facie method of evaluation. This is not a new issue with this court. This exact same issue was raised time and time again in connection with 5711.18, the general property taxing statute. And the commissioner time after time has said that statute says depreciated book value. But that statute also says if depreciated book value isn't true value, then the commissioner should do something else.
Does the statute say shall use, the commissioner shall use X method under 18? I didn't think it did.
I believe that under 18 it says that depreciated book value shall be true value unless the assessor finds that this depreciated book value is greater or less than true value. The language is slightly different, but I think the meaning and intent of those statutes is identical. That is, it creates a prima facie statutory method, which will presumably be used in most cases, as has been the case with respect to 5711 since the enactment. But in a specific case, if a taxpayer can show, as these taxpayers did in these cases, that statutory method doesn't produce true value, which is precisely what the BTA found. The BTA found that the appraisal that was submitted by these taxpayers did reflect true value. The BTA also found that the statutory method applied in this case did not reflect true value. So the only question this court has to decide is, does the BTA have to do what the statute says to do, even though the BTA expressed it down and did reflect true value of these taxpayers' property?
What under the statute, what do you see as a taxpayer's burden to defeat the presumption or the prima facie method of the capitalized cost method? You just submit your here the unit value method and hope the commissioner agrees with you, or don't you have to somehow give evidence as to why this is not evidence of true value, why the statutory method is not evidence of true value?
I would suggest, Your Honor, that the burden on the taxpayer is precisely the same as the burden this court has enunciated for a deviation under 5711.18. That burden is credible evidence of probative value as to what the true value of the property is. That is the standard this court has enunciated time and time again under 5711.18, and it's the standard this court has applied to allow a deviation under the Commissioner's 302 computation. And let me make that point, because we got hung up in talking about special and unusual circumstances. That's the first part of the 302 computation standard. This court has expressly held there's a second part to the 302 computation standard, another way to get around the 302 methodology in a case where it doesn't reflect true value, and that is simply to present credible, probative evidence as to what the true value is. That's
what we did in this case. The commissioner says, as you know, that the threefold increase in valuation was not accompanied by any figures or data in the record to support that, to show that the different formula was the reason for that threefold increase rather than an increase in the valuation of your property. What's your response to that?
My response to that is twofold. First of all, there is certainly evidence in the record as to what the increase was. To the extent the commissioner suggested otherwise, that's just not the case. Second, I believe there's sufficient information in the record that the BTA could have determined the extent to which that was a result of the statutory methodology versus any other factor. All of the information was there from which that determination could be made.
Did the BTA, the commissioner argues, as you know, argues that the BTA apparently included that cost of changing the World War II pipeline, that was done in 1990 and included that in the 1991 increase in valuation. Is that accurate? Should they have done that? As I understand the commission's argument, that was done in 1990, which is not the tax year in question here.
I am somewhat reluctant to talk a lot about special circumstances because I simply believe we're talking about the wrong state.
Well, let's just look at it from a valuation standpoint then. I agree. I think there's too much emphasis in this case on special circumstances because it seems like it's awfully convenient to use it when it doesn't really seem to help us, to me at least, in getting to true value.
Yes, sir. To respond to your question, the importance of the expenditure in Ohio is that, yes, $81 million was spent in Ohio, and under the statutory methodology, those dollars would all go into the tax for personal property. The problem is those dollars didn't add value to the system. The system had the same capacity before that project was undertaken.
I thought the
system had the same capacity after.
I thought the capacity was lower because the pipe was deteriorating and you had to lower the whatever cubic feet or pressure.
Thank you for pointing that out. What really happened here is, again, we restored the system to its original capacity. We added a new capacity. We didn't add value to this system.
But if someone were purchasing the system in 1989, and they knew you had World War II pipe that was deteriorated, wouldn't they pay less for it than they would pay in 1991 after you'd restored the pipe? You had a new pipe now, which was the kind of pipe you wanted and needed?
It's probably so to some degree. Obviously, there's a question of how much for it, and would they have paid dollar for dollar for this $80 million expansion,
right,
particularly vis-a-vis the system as it existed 10 years prior when people didn't understand that this problem was out there. Because, again, all we did was restore the capacity system, didn't increase the capacity.
But isn't this system a sum of all of its parts as opposed to the unit designation? Why wouldn't we use a summation concept?
Simply doesn't make any sense, Your Honor. We wouldn't appraise a house by walking into the kitchen and saying, well, how much is the kitchen worth? Walking into the bedroom and saying, what's the bedroom worth? Try to add all those things.
But you wouldn't appraise the line from Columbus to Toledo at a single unit price if it had a deviation at Marion. If there was a break at Marion, it would have to be, isn't it a sum of all the parts?
Not at all, Your Honor. The testimony of the BGA was explicit, and it was offered by the two preeminent valuation experts in pipelines in this country. And they said that the appropriate way to value these pipeline systems was to value the entire system and then allocate the appropriate parts of that value to the states in which the system exists.
Well, the General Assembly said it should do it differently. Now, who's right here? I mean, the statement was made even that the appraiser said that he might be violating his code of ethics or whatever to value it the way the tax commissioner wants. The General Assembly didn't have this information when they adopted the statute. Do we know? Or I mean, it seems like it's
I certainly can't
an incredible statement.
The General Assembly had it before when they enacted the statute.
I guess we assume they do.
Have the forethought to recognize that there could well be situations where the prescribed method didn't work. Just as they did in 5711.18.
Counsel, on that subject, doesn't the statute say if the commissioner finds the application of this method will not result in a determination of true value of the public utility's taxable property, he may use another method of valuation?
Yes, it does. 5711.18 talks about the assessor. And what this court has always said is that the BTA is the authority with respect to valuation. And the BTA's decisions with respect to valuation have been disturbed only in the rarest of circumstances, and certainly not in like the circumstances presented here, where two prominent experts testified as to what the true value of the system was.
Well, what about the practical concerns voiced by the state on behalf of the tax commissioner? You just said there are only two preeminent experts on pipeline appraisal in the country. Your company hired them both. So what kind of a position does that, your company is a huge corporation with enormous resources. Most public utilities are in that category. What's to prevent a
public utility from running out and tying up all the best appraisers and putting the tax commission in a position, if you take the approach, you're going to have an appraisal approach to each one of these, where they really don't have a good expert even available to them.
Well, Your Honor, I do believe we had two of the finest experts in this field, and I didn't mean to suggest that there aren't others. I'm sure there are others.
Okay. So as a practical matter, now, how does this work?
As a practical matter,
In terms of the future, is it one time and then it's locked in forever, or does the state and the tax commissioner have the opportunity to come along and say the business, the pipeline business, flourishes and blossoms, and all of a sudden this pipeline is worth 10 times what it is today? Can they come right back in and with an appraisal and use the same techniques that you've used to say it's undervalued now?
Understand, first of all, Your Honor, that under a unitary appraisal methodology, if in fact the pipeline becomes substantially more valuable, that would be reflected in the valuation of the property in Ohio. In fact, I want the court to understand that it's a two-way street. It could well be that under the unitary approach, you'll have a higher valuation for the property in Ohio, or under a unitary approach, you may have a lower valuation, which happened to be the case here. There could be any number of other situations.
Well, what you're asking us to write would leave the commissioner the option where the unitary approach appears to reflect the true value, and it is higher than cost to tax it in that fashion?
I certainly think that door would be open, but I don't want to...
Was that possible under the statute, in your view?
I believe it is possible under the statute. If the commissioner finds that the statutory method does reflect the value, the commissioner is empowered to do something else. I don't want to get too hung up on this issue of the unitary appraisal, because I just wanted to be clear that was simply how true value was established in this case.
Well, now let's go back to the statute. I know the Chief Justice asked this question, but I don't think I understood the answer. Do you agree that the commissioner used 572711, applied the statute as it's written?
No, I don't think the commissioner did that. In the sense that the commissioner...
Okay.
And the testimony was...
They say they did. That's where I think we're running into the problem.
The commissioner applied the prima facie methodology in the statute. The commissioner, this is clear from the record, and it's in the record, acknowledged that there was never a determination that happened left the true value in this case. They just did what the statute said to do.
Aren't they supposed to do that?
Well,
the General Assembly says, here's the law, follow it. They did that.
They are supposed to possess personal property at true value. That is the mandate of 5727.10, where this analysis has to begin, which says the commissioner shall determine true value. And I want to point out, it's also the mandate of the Constitution of the State of Ohio. There was some disagreement in the briefing here as to what the Constitution of the State of Ohio provides. And I just want to make it clear that in 1968, this court said in the Gahanna Heights case that the Constitution of the State of Ohio requires that property taxed according to value, obviously the case here, be taxed at its true value in money.
So if you don't get the true value under the methodology provided in 11, that statute is what? Unconstitutional?
Yeah, absolutely not, because the statute says if you don't get the true value, do something else. There's no problem with the statute. The statute says if you don't get the true value using this methodology, you can do something else.
So what you're saying is the commissioner just stopped short.
Yes. And the BPA, again, as the expert evaluation, so recognized by this court with the authority and broad discretion with respect to making valuation determinations, found that was the case. That the taxpayers in these cases did establish true value through the evidence they presented and through the witnesses they presented, and that a road application of the statutory method in this case did not produce true value. Plain and simple. And the question this court has to decide is, are these taxpayers going to be stuck with a determination that clearly did not reflect true value? Because a decision in favor of the tax commissioner, that is the result.
Well, the Board of Tax Appeals did that, but I guess the question is they did it relying upon, as I read their opinion, did it relying upon these two special circumstances, one of which to me is I'm going to read the record, but to me is questionable.
Your Honor, let me speak to that point, because if that's the court's impression, I believe that impression is incorrect. The Board of Tax Appeals first concluded that the statutory method was prima facie only, and that presented with probative, credible evidence as to what the true value really was, that the taxpayer had met its burden and therefore reduced the valuation. The special circumstances issue is, if you will, an alternative holding. The court went, the BTA, excuse me, on to say that even if we got into these 302 standards, which we don't believe is appropriate, we think those standards have been met. So the special circumstances issue is a backup, if you will. The fundamental notion that underlies the BTA's decision is precisely the notion that underlies this court's decisions under 5711.18 and this court's decisions involving the commissioner's 302 computation, which is simply that when the taxpayer shows that true value is something other than what either the directive or the statutory mandate in 5711.18 indicates, the taxpayer has met the taxpayer's burden. That doesn't end the ballgame. The commissioner still has the ability and the right to introduce his own evidence as to what true value should be, or as to why the statutory method is appropriate, or his directive is appropriate.
You've used your time, Mr. Russell. You've used your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Sauer, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Taxpayer suggests that the commissioner erred in violation of 72711 when he refused to accept a unitary appraisal in lieu of a statutory calculation. That and nothing else. That simply isn't what. Now, if this court is dissatisfied with the standard applied by the tax commission for the estate clause, special arrangement circumstance, the tax commission results in an articulation of another standard. But whatever this court articulates is the standard for avoiding statutory calculation. You should not
the statute requires the determination by the tax commissioner that the formula reflect the true value. Did the tax commissioner make that determination?
Pardon?
Did the tax commissioner make a determination that the formula in fact reflect the true value?
The statute says if the tax commissioner determines that the formula does not reflect resulting true value.
So did he make a determination?
That it did not result in true value. No,
did he make a determination one way or the other?
He made the determination required by statute. The statute says determine whether or not the statutory formula does not result in true value. The burden is to show that the formula does not result in true value. You do not have to endorse the statutory calculation by bringing in auxiliary evidence to support it. The whole point.
Well, but did he make a finding of any kind?
He made a finding that there was no showing. The statutory calculation did not produce true value. That's what his finding was.
Thank you, Mr. Sauer. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.